Normal broadcasting has been discontinued.
Coming to you from Portland, Oregon,
the sports business capital of North America.
Keep your radio tuned to this frequency.
You're listening to Sports Business Radio. Now, your host.
I tell you, I've never seen anything like that guy.
Brian Berger.
Well, thanks for checking out the only show in the country dedicated to covering the business side of sports. Glad you could join us this week. In segment three, Jennifer Seward. She's with the True Cowboy Rodeo Talent Agency. She's the owner. She's essentially an agent for pro bull riders. She's going to explain to us how the PBR has grown from a small business in 1992. A few riders got together and invested $1,000 each. Now it's a multi-million dollar business. They offer $10 million in prize money. They've got sponsors like Ford, Enterprise Rent-A-Cars, and many others tied to them. So we talk about the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball. Again, it's good to sometimes look at the second and third, even fourth tier sports. We're going to do that with the PBR this week in our conversation with Jennifer Seward. In segment four, we'll be joined by John Wartime. He's joined us before. He's Sports Illustrated senior writer. He had a chance to talk to Andre Agassi this week, and we'll talk about Agassi in his tell-all book. It's very confusing why he wrote this book now. He's got an unblemished reputation, and kind of curious why this book comes out now. We'll talk to Wartime about that. We'll also talk about the state of the NBA in New York and New Jersey. It is pitiful right now. And then we'll talk about the Yankees and the Mets since John is in New York. That's coming up in segment four. Couple of other notes. Visit my Sports Business blogger. Download the SBR podcast on demand. Just go to sportsbusinessradio.com. Become our Facebook friend. Follow me via Twitter. Just visit my blog at sportsbusinessradio.com. Link to the Sports Business Radio Facebook and Twitter pages. My handle on Twitter, at SB Radio. I'm joined in studio by our producer, Bobby Corser, and by Nathan Roach. Nathan, kind of excited to talk about PBR this week. Again, you know, we had your friend, Travis Parrott, mixed doubles champion for the U.S. Open, on a few months ago, and he told us about how much money he makes. He's a journeyman. Now we're going to learn about how much some of these riders make in the PBR.
Well, yeah, and if you've never been to a PBR event, as far as live exciting sports, you've got to check one out. Regardless of how much they make, it is a lot of fun to watch.
Bobby, and they do some good merchandising too, don't they?
They do. Their merchandise trailers that they roll out to events are second to none. You can buy anything you think of when it comes to rodeo at these little booths.
Well, and sometimes the bulls are stars bigger than the riders. So we'll talk about that. That's coming up in segment three. But next, headlines. Sponsored by the Warsaw Sports Marketing Center at the University of Oregon. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. I'll be right back.
It's been a long week. I've got a slow leak in my left front.
This is Brian Berger from Sports Business Radio. I know many of our listeners dream of a job in the sports industry but don't know where to begin. To me, it's an easy call. Go where sports business education got its start, at the Warsaw Sports Marketing Center at the University of Oregon. As the first business school in the country to offer undergraduate and graduate programs themed around this multi-billion dollar industry, the Warsaw Center offers a unique blend and strong general business training, sports business curriculum taught by industry experts, and rich out-of-classroom experiences, including real-world consulting projects, study tours, and internships. With a strong industry and alumni network and a staff dedicated to accelerating your career, the Warsaw Center has a proven track record of placing students in teams, league offices, corporate sponsors, marketing agencies, sports media, and sports shoe and apparel firms. But like any elite team, there's only a few spots on the roster. To learn more, visit sportsbusinessradio.com for a link to the center's website. The Warsaw Sports Marketing Center, passion, integrity, and leadership in sports business education.
Back to Sports Business Radio with Brian Berger.
It's time for this week's Sports Business Radio headline, sponsored by the Warsaw Sports Marketing Center at the University of Oregon. Visit warsawcenter.com for more information. Headline number one, the fallout from Chicago's failed 2016 Olympic bid continues this week. The USOC announced on Thursday that former NFL Commissioner Paul Tagliabue will head a committee charged with assessing the organization's governance structure. In a release, the USOC said the committee will assess the size, structure, and operating practices of the USOC board. They're going to recommend changes if appropriate. Nathan, this is really no surprise because Everyone from Dick Ebersol to Paul Tagliabue to many others have come out and said, look, there's a reason that Chicago got thrown out basically in the first round of voting for the finalists for the 2016 Olympic Games a few months ago, and there needs to be major restructuring from top to bottom. So Paul Tagliabue, who obviously knows how to run an organization from being the commissioner of the NFL for many years, is now the chair at Georgetown University, but he's also a consultant, and he's going to take this project on. I think it's a good choice.
Well, and I think a lot of people want some answers. They just want to know why. They want to know what went wrong, what they can do to fix it next time and change the process.
Right, and also figure out how we can improve our standing on the world stage so that people take us a little bit more seriously. Our next headline, the NFL Network kicked off its 8-game regular season Thursday night football schedule this past Thursday, Bears 49ers. The NFL Network is now seen in 53 million homes after ending a carriage dispute with Comcast in May. Still has a smaller audience than ESPN and TBS, but it is growing, and the Thursday schedule includes a Christmas night game between the Chargers and the Titans. Nathan, you know, the NFL Network continues to grow. They've made big leaps and bounds. They're not quite where the MLB Network is, and the MLB Network launched to a much bigger audience, but 53 million is a lot more than they had a few years ago.
Well, and a lot more people have the MLB Network. My frustration is I don't have the NFL Network, and a lot of other people are frustrated, too, that these games, there's only a handful of NFL games a season, that they can't watch these games on Thursday night. I talked to people all week this week that wanted to see the Bears play, and they had to figure out a place to go to watch the game. And I know that's a big frustration. We saw what happened last year with the NFL Network and the Patriots.
One of the strategies to keep your eyes open for next year, will the NFL move more regular season games to the NFL Network, thus putting more pressure on carriers to pick up the NFL Network because you'd be missing more games? And as we know, the NFL gets tremendous TV ratings and is very popular. Our next headline, tonight in Las Vegas, Manny Pacquiao and Miguel Cotto square off. Manny Pacquiao, along with Floyd Mayweather Jr., really the biggest draws in boxing now. Takati is all over this fight. They're doing lots of different promotions. But if Pacquiao can win this fight, it sets up a potential humongous showdown between the two biggest draws, Mayweather Jr. and Manny Pacquiao. And Pacquiao really has become a household name. I mean, this is a guy who's got deals with Nike. He's in commercials with Tiger Woods and Kobe Bryant and Maria Sharapova. And he's doing more and more interviews because his English is improving. I saw a bunch of interviews with him this week on a number of media outlets. And a year ago, he wasn't doing interviews with American media because his English was not very good because he's Filipino.
Well, one of the things we talk about is boxing right now is getting worked by MMA. And they need more big fights like this to revitalize boxing, if you will. So these are the types of fights that people want to tune into and will help get that sport back on the same level as MMA.
We will have pay-per-view numbers for you hopefully next week following the fight, but I expect that they will be very, very big. Our final headline of the week, we told you about this last week, the Colbert Report is sponsoring the U.S. speed skating team. They're not giving them money, but what they've done is they've put their logo, the Colbert Report, on the speed skating uniforms, and we said they were hoping to raise $300,000. Well, guess what? After week one of this promotion, $202,000 has been raised for the U.S. speed skating team. It shows you the power of the Colbert Report,
I guess. Nation. It's
yeah.
Colbert Nation that's stepping up, and I just find this such a hilarious sponsor, but I think it's great. It's great for both parties involved.
Finally, last headline. I think I said there was a last headline before, but one more. SI.com is reporting that The Who is going to be this year's halftime act during the Super Bowl.
Eminence Front.
Well, and I'll steal a line from my friend Charles Robinson at Yahoo. Ever since the Janet Jackson fiasco, all of these older acts, they're now considered safe for the Super Bowl halftime act, and it's given them a whole new venue and platform and career.
Safe. These guys did more drugs in their day than any of the other performers that got up there. So.
Yeah, but if they rip their clothes off, I don't think it's going to be nearly as damaging as the Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake fiasco. All right, coming up next, Jennifer Seward. She is the owner of True Cowboy. She's a rodeo sports agent. We're going to talk PBR, pro bull riding. That's coming up next. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. There's Justin.
Sports Business Radio talks to the people who call the shots in the world of sports.
My guest is Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban. Let's go back to the year 2000. The year before you bought the Mavericks, they were 40-42. Fan interest was pretty lukewarm. When you bought this team, what did you see in this team? What was the potential that you saw to get them to where they are today?
Probably none.
Brian Berger goes one-on-one with the biggest names.
My guest is Dr. Miles Brand, the president of the NCAA.
I think the reason why we have a BCS-type system in Division 1A and elsewhere we have playoffs is that the schools in Division 1A feel that the regular season is the most important aspect of football.
Read the Sports Business blog and listen to SBR On Demand at sportsbusinessradio.com.
See, I think that's the big thing.
Sports Business Radio, Saturday. Or online at sportsbusinessradio.com. This is Sports Business Radio.
Well, we said a few weeks ago when we had Chris Mike in that we rarely have in-studio guests. Most of our guests are on the phone. But we are once again lucky to have an in-studio guest this week. Jennifer Seward, she is the owner of True Cowboy. It's a rodeo sports agency. You can find her on Twitter at True Rodeo Cowboy. She's also the co-host of Cutting Up Radio, which you can find on cuttingupradio.com. Thank you for joining us this week, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start with an overview of what you do as a rodeo sports agent.
Well, my business actually is centered around marketing. And so as a sports agent, I offer marketing for my rodeo athletes that I represent. Now, the rodeo athletes in the industry can only offer so much for sponsors. And therefore, I've decided to come up with a company, which is a marketing company and sports agency, that offers additional exposure for the athletes and the sponsors. So in addition to what the athletes can offer, they can, in addition, get marketing from my company.
Let's talk about for a moment, and we talk about athletes, we're talking about pro bull riders.
Yes.
So what can they offer? I mean, we see, you know, in tennis what you can wear as far as logos, golf, NASCAR. When you're a pro bull rider, what can you do as far as putting logos on yourself to brand yourself for a sponsor?
Well, in the PBR, it's really great because they don't have any stipulations or rules or regulations regarding their sponsors on their shirt. They can wear them as large as they want, anywhere they want on their shirt, and on their chaps, as well as on their gloves and on their helmet. Regarding, I guess, additional sports such as the PRCA, which is rodeo events as well, they have rules and regulations on how many sponsors they can have and whether it conflicts with their national sponsors and such. So the PBR, you would have a lot of exposure via the television aspect and also, you know, additional marketing exposure through the PBR. But when it comes to shirts, they can have as many as they want on their shirt and or, you know, they have some availability on their chaps. So
is there a target category of sponsors that you go after? Obviously, Wrangler, Jack Daniels, those are names that come to mind when you think of PBR. Is there a category or is it much broader?
They're focusing now a little bit more broader. I mean, a lot of people just tried to focus so much on things that related to the Western industry and therefore, but the consumers that watch PBR are their normal everyday consumers. So to allow those other brands to come in is very vital to keeping, you know, these sort of organizations going. So they have broadened their horizons and got into new markets and let them know that this is a place that they can market, and it's fairly, you know, untapped in sort of senses, and especially in just the regular rodeo realm, that, you know, they're still kind of still sticking to those Western markets. And it's just letting like the corporations know that this is a big market with 100 million fans, and this is a place to get in and get in, not so much on the ground level so much anymore with the PBR, but, you know, at an affordable price.
Jennifer, let's take a step back and talk about the PBR as an organization. It was started in 1992. They've got well over $10 million in prize money now. Like Nathan alluded to, they've got sponsors like Ford and Wrangler and Jack Daniels, Enterprise. They're also on TV. I believe they have a deal with CBS, correct, for...
Yes, and they're on Fox and NBC and Versus.
Okay, so good TV exposure. On this show all the time we talk about you're not really going to be successful unless you've got quality TV exposure. How many competitions are there a year? How many competitors are there? I know there's different levels, much like in NASCAR, there's different levels of competition. Maybe you can give a general overview of the PBR for our listeners.
For the PBR, there's about 1,200 riders that compete in the PBR. There are four different categories or tours or series that they have. The biggest one is the Built for Tough series, which has features the top 45 bull riders in the world. And they have 31 events. And then there's the Challenger Tour, the Enterprise Rental Car Tour, and the Discovery Tour. Now, the lower spectrums, I guess, of the Challenger, the Enterprise, and Discovery are for the rest of the bull riders, and they have different standings in each tour. You definitely have to be in the top 40 to be part of the Built Ford Tough series. They televise those every time, but then they have a few of the Challenger and the Enterprise and Discovery tours that they also televise as well.
Yeah, and I was reading the story. It seems like there was just a small group of riders that each invested $1,000 to start the PBR. Years later, they basically sold this to a big management company for millions of dollars. So the riders who invested $1,000 turned that into millions of dollars. Great investment, and they've obviously grown the sport.
Right. I think it was a capitalist company out in New York for about $100 million, I think, or something like that. But now they have some more investors and even some, you know, big time sports people such as Wayne Gretzky and John Elway are now investors in the PBR.
Well, it sounds like there's more and more money coming in every single year. And I guess the question we always ask in individual sports here on the radio show is, how much does an athlete make? I know we threw out the number $10 million just a minute ago, but talk about what the top tier athlete makes as a bull rider, and maybe someone that's on that bottom, you know, Challenger, Enterprise, or even the entry level, you know, PBR rider makes.
Well, I mean, it differs on obviously how good the rider is. I mean, you can enter so many bull ridings and still not win a dime. So the ranges from the places that you can win. Some bull riders make $30,000 a year. Some make up to almost $2 million. The winner of the Built Ford Tough series and, you know, world champion, they're ranging between $1.7 million and $1.9 million. So, but that's at the end when they win the actual world championship and or the average there at the event. So, and that's $1 million to win the world. So, and that's something that's huge because that is not something that has been done in rodeo.
For our listeners, this is not an easy way to make a living. First of all, you're trying to ride a bull for 8 seconds. It's trying to throw you off. Secondly, like you just said, Jennifer, you can invest a lot of your own money and travel and going to these events and practicing, things like that, and you may not win a dime. So it's prize money you're competing for. There's no guarantee that if you enter a competition, you're going to walk away with any money in your pocket, right?
Correct. Yeah, there's a lot of guys out there that go broke during the year and or, you know, get injured and they've gone so far and, you know, have to hang it up for the rest of the year or even indefinitely, but, you know, because it's a very dangerous sport to be doing. And you see now guys out there with hockey helmets because, you know, there's that chance of you coming down on a bull and breaking your face or them stepping on you. They got their jackets on that now protect, you know, their vital organs and stuff like that. But, you know, it's still very, very dangerous. And they have amazing bullfighters that put their life on the line every night, you know, that they're out there riding. And the best in the world.
We've got a few minutes left with Jennifer Seward. She is the owner of True Cowboy. She's a rodeo sports agent. We're learning about the PBR and the rodeo industry. Tell us your opinion on the future of the PBR. It's come a long way since 1992. Where do you see the growth going forward?
Well, they're coming up with fantastic new ideas to break into the interests of new, I guess, fans, and keeping the fans that they have right now intrigued. And in 2010, they're going to be holding a Built Ford Tough Series bull run at the Cowboys Stadium in Arlington, Texas. So in February, on the 20th, they're going to be doing the Iron Cowboy Invitational, where they're going to feature 24 riders, and they're going to be going, you know, head-to-head. Some of them, two riders riding the same bull. So it's pretty much, you know, very even Steven for, you know, two riders going against each other on the same bull. So anyway, that's something that's huge, never been done, and they're doing it at, you know, the great Cowboy Stadium.
Yeah, which holds 100,000 people. Before we let you go, tell us a little bit more about your company, and I know you also co-host Cutting Up Radio, which you can find at cuttingupradio.com.
My company is about a year old now, and I've been just building it from the ground up and finding new ways to market sponsors such as radio. And I was able to come upon Cutting Up Radio and start a show, which is every Tuesday on Cutting Up Radio. And, you know, what we're going to be doing is visiting and interviewing with rodeo athletes and other people of the rodeo industry. So it's really to get people's vision of the athletes and their perspective on rodeo and also the people in the rodeo industry. So it's also to feature our sponsors and just give updates on the guys that I represent. We always follow up with them, and we're going to be down at the Wrangler National Finals, which is for just regular rodeo in general for the PRCA. And two of my guys are going to be competing down there, one in the saddle bronc riding and one in the tie-down roping. And there's both their third time to the national finals. So every day I'm trying to find new ways to promote the sponsors and my athletes. And so it's a constant, you know, finding new contacts and things like that that can help, you know, bring my company to life and make it a solid marketing company.
So if anyone's listening to this show and they want to do some business with you, how do they find you?
Well, they can reach me at truerodeocowboy.com. There's a contact us part where you can find me, and you can learn a little bit more about True Cowboy, so, and my athletes. But we have a blog that is on there, so there's constant updates, and you can follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook and MySpace. So every social outlet you could possibly think of or networking, I'm on it. So
you've embraced social media. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us this week and for enlightening us on pro bull riding. It's definitely a fast-growing sport. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You're listening to Sports Business Radio. I'll be right back. When that sun is high in that Texas sky, I'll be bucking it to... Hi, this is Brian Berger, host of Sports Business Radio. When I'm looking for a place to have dinner with family, friends, or business associates, there's only one restaurant on my list. Morton's The Steakhouse, the best steak anywhere. In its 28th year in business, Morton's serves only the finest quality foods, featuring USDA prime aged beef, fresh seafood, hand-picked produce, and decadent desserts prepared to perfection. Not to mention the award-winning wine list. When my destination is Morton's, the best is always on the menu. And they treat me like a VIP during every visit, whether in the dining room or the private boardrooms. With almost 75 restaurants conveniently located around the world, Morton's is the gold standard when it comes to steakhouses. To find the Morton's nearest you or to make a reservation, go online to Morton's.com. Morton's, the best steak anywhere, and the official steakhouse of Sports Business Radio.
One-on-one with those making the big-time decisions that impact your sport. This is Sports Sense on Sports Business Radio. Sports Business Radio.
My guest is John Wartime. He's the senior writer for Sports Illustrated. He's been a guest on this show many times before. John, thanks for joining us on Sports Business Radio this week.
Pleasure. Good to be here.
So, John, obviously you cover tennis very closely. Andre Agassi has a new autobiography out called Open. He admits in the book that he used crystal meth
You had a chance to talk to Agassi this week. Explain to us maybe the reasoning for writing this book now from his perspective, because it certainly taints his legacy with some people.
Yeah, I mean, the dynamic of this is really interesting, where, you know, we're used to seeing something unflattering brought up about an athlete and then they have to go into damage control mode. We're used to seeing athletes' names leaked with in connection to drugs and they have to go into damage control mode. This has really been a weird one because Agassi basically, you know, for lack of a better word, outed himself. And a lot of this was really kind of, you know, self-imposed. I think, you know, he's a pretty confessional guy, a pretty open guy to start with. He's no longer playing tennis. He's 39 years old. He's happily married. I think his attitude was, now I can finally reflect. It was all happening so fast at the time, but now I can sort of take a step back and figure out what the heck happened and what it all means. And I think, you know, in some ways it's really to his credit. I mean, we've read a lot of these celebrity books and these as told to's, and it's basically, you know, selective anecdotes and I love everybody and everybody was a tough opponent. And, you know, Andre really came out firing. You know, the unfortunate part is that now, you know, he's got a lot of people that aren't so happy with him. And, you know, two weeks ago, the guy's image was pretty much unblemished. I mean, just sterling image, this philanthropist, great guy. And it's a little strange to see, you know, St. Andre suddenly on the defensive here. But, you know, I think eventually this will all kind of blow over to some extent. But I think the motivation, to your original question, the motivation is really what nobody's quite figured out. But I think, in, you know, he told me, look, I wanted to do this and I wanted to do it right. And that meant telling the truth and not just kind of picking and choosing the anecdotes that made me look good.
I think part of this is part confessional. You know, he's kind of getting this off his chest at the end of his career. But I also have a very reliable source, and I'm not going to name my source. And I know some people think that's irresponsible, but I have a very reliable source that tells me that one of the reasons that Andre Agassi wrote this book is because someone very close to him was going to out him. So instead of being outed by someone else, he basically went on the offensive and outed himself first.
Yeah, I mean, I've sort of heard similar things. I mean, he's in a very bitter legal dispute with his former, you know, agent and business partner, and, you know, who's a guy that, you know, ironically figures very prominently and very flatteringly in the book. And I think, you know, this information was out there. I don't know if this was about a single person having information or a number of people. I mean, remember, there was a whole tribunal that had heard this. We're now hearing about people at the ATP that knew about this. You know, a good many people knew about this crystal meth, this positive drug test. And, you know, you also have to remember, here's a guy who's very much in public. He has the schools, there's philanthropy, there's fundraising. And, you know, you never knew when this was going to surface. And by putting it out there the way he has, he's sort of controlled the message. And as you said, he's gotten out in front of it. And, you know, in some ways, I think it's very savvy.
Well, I mean, it's kind of the David Letterman school of PR, right? I mean, David Letterman goes on his show and confesses to having an affair. Instead of someone writing about this and him having to go on the defensive, he gets out in front of it and says, look, you know, I had to go to court today and address X, Y, and Z. And he fell on the sword, so to speak. And in a different platform, I see Agassi doing the same thing.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, you know also that Agassi was on Letterman's show last night, so they both, you know, they could commiserate. But no, I mean, it's been a very interesting. I mean, the dynamic here has been really interesting, and I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I think, you know, I talked to Andre yesterday, and here's a guy who's been in the limelight. I mean, this guy's been a public figure since he's 15, 16 years old. He's 39 now, and talking to him yesterday, he sort of said all the right things, but I really got the sense he's still a little shell-shocked by all this. You know, he was going from interview to interview, and he knows what the vibe is out there. He hears these other players have spoken ill of him. I mean, he's very sort of attuned to the criticism, and I got the feeling he's still a little bit sort of taken aback by all this, and not to say he regrets doing it or would do it differently, but I got the feeling this was sort of more than he bargained for.
Last question about Agassi. You know, here's a guy who one of his commercial mottos was image is everything. what does this do for his image going forward? If he was going to work with a company and be an endorser or be part of business partnerships, what do you think this does to his image going forward? Does it make people want to work with him more because he's been so forthcoming and honest, or do they go, you know, I don't know if I want my brand associated with someone who has done crystal meth and done some of the things that he's done?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is the commercial side. Part of it also, honestly, is the fundraising he does for his school, which,
right.
You know, I wonder how that's all going to play out. But I think, you know, I think some of this is just unfortunate timing. He dabbled in crystal meth in 1997. No one's condoning it. No one's saying it's advisable. But that was really before athletes and drugs became such a hot button issue. And it's before, honestly, before crystal meth became so prominent. Yeah, you know, it was 12 years ago, and I think he sort of figured, hey, look, that's the past is the past, and I've done so much since. People aren't going to necessarily care so much about something that's such ancient history. You know, if that's true, he sort of miscalculated there. But I think when people read this book and see how honest he was and see what he had to go through and sort of look at him a little more fully, you know, I think right now it's obviously a hot media topic, but I'm not sure in the long run this affects him all that much.
Joined by John Wartime. He's a senior writer for Sports Illustrated. John, you tell me you're going to catch up with Carmelo Anthony. Is that true in Denver?
That's where I'm headed next, yeah.
So Carmelo's off to a great start. I mean, some people are mentioning him as a potential MVP. He's always had amazing talent since he won a national championship at Syracuse. Is this the year where he elevates himself to the same conversation as Kobe and LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Paul?
All the guys he was drafted with. I mean, I think a lot of it depends on the team. But, no, I mean, you look at the numbers he's picked up, and he's, you know, he's had a couple of incidents that he's not particularly proud of. But, you know, you look at what Denver did last year, and he really seems to have settled into his own. And, again, these numbers have been fantastic. I mean, Denver's had a rough go of it, too, playing a lot of road games and not a lot of easy opponents. And, you know, I mean, it's one of these things. The NBA can take all the stars, you know, it can get right now. And if he can sort of take that next step, you know, it's only good for the league.
So you're based in New York. I've got to ask you, as of this interview, the Knicks and Nets are a combined 1-16. I mean, you mentioned to me earlier on the phone that the Yankees may win more games in November than the Knicks and the Nets combined, which is no joke. I mean, let's look at each organization for a moment. You've got the Knicks, and they've kind of been preaching patience, and they brought in Donnie Walsh. They've got Mike D'Antoni as their coach, but we're not seeing any results. They're saying, hey, wait till we have more cap space, but they're still charging a premium for tickets. Then you've got the Nets, who are 0-8, but on the horizon, they've got this potential Russian billionaire who's going to come in and infuse them with money. Which team do you think can turn things around the fastest?
Well, the great hope, of course, is they lure the big free agent, the Knicks do. The Nets are really sort of an interesting horror show of a franchise. I mean, they committed to this move years ago to Brooklyn, so they've basically been lame ducks. The Brooklyn move was basically a real estate play for a developer. We all know the real estate market isn't what it is today, what it was, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago when this deal was made. Who knows if they're ever going to make it to Brooklyn? Meanwhile, they've been a lame duck franchise, not in the most attractive market or venue to start with. Now they have, you know, a new Russian owner that nobody knows much about. It's sort of a fascinating play. And the Knicks are a different story, but it's just pretty much a wait till next summer. The team still feels a little awkward. You know, we all love Mike D'Antoni, but, you know, the record this year isn't what it needs to be. You know, is Eddie Curry the answer to their problems? Is a healthy Nate Robinson the answer? I mean, it's a strange vibe. It seems like a strangely put-together team still. And, again, you talk about the NBA. You know, they can spin it how they want, but it's not good that in such a prominent media market you've got two teams that are just awful. So two very different types of situations, but it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out for both these teams.
Well, the NBA thus far has been very interesting to watch. And when I say that, I mean I was watching the Memphis-Portland game the other night, and I swear to you that 80% of the seats in Memphis were empty. And
I mean, they showed that outlaw dunk, and they they panned it, and I thought it was a practice.
Yeah, it's and there are other teams besides Memphis in the league right now that have a lot of empty seats. And if I'm Commissioner Stern, you know, we told the teams coming into the season that it's a slow economy, it's going to impact us, but boy, I'll tell you what, you know, there certainly seem to be the haves and the have-nots.
Well, I mean, the sort of the socialism of TV is what is what's going to be the saving grace. But, you know, I see the same thing in all, you know, you see, take the NFL out of the equation and you see the same thing in all sports. And whether we're going to see actual downsizing, whether we're going to see franchises, you know, Columbus or Phoenix and hockey, some of the, that Memphis crowd was just abominable. Whether we're going to see relocation or, I mean, I could just see some of these leagues contracting. And my question is, if you're one of these owners that's spending money and fielding a team, eventually it's got to get old if you're the Yankees subsidizing the Pittsburgh Pirates. If you're, you know, a team like Portland or the Lakers that sell out night in, night out and sort of run your business well, it's got to get old after a while to basically subsidize these bottom five or six teams. No, it's not looking like it's any better. And, you know, you talk about all these businesses now, they're watching their finances. The first thing that goes in a lot of these kids, these club seats are pretty low-hanging fruit, I would think. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out, especially, you know, what happens with labor and what happens with television.
My guest is John Wartime. He's a senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Just a few minutes left. Again, John, you're in New York. The Yankees this month win their 27th World Championship. So here's my question. I said on the show last week, the Yankees should win every year. They spent $200 million on their payroll this year. They spent $1.3 billion the previous 8 years and didn't win a championship. Because they're spending so much money, they should be able to buy the best talent. I know it doesn't always work that way, but talk to me about the future of the Yankees, because it seems to me they can go in one of two directions. They can either A, buy the best talent in free agency every year like they've been doing in recent years, or B, at some point they can say, you know what, we need to put some focus into our farm system again and bring up guys like we did Jeter, Pettit, Rivera, Cano, and others, instead of going out and buying Mark Teixeira and A.J. Burnett and C.C. Sabathia. How do you think they're going to approach business going forward?
Yeah, they'll say it's not an either or, and we can develop good players, and then if a Sabathia comes on the open market, we can, you know, open the checkbooks. But you know, I think the one thing this team had going for it is that I thought it was a pretty likable team. That it was hard to generate too much. I mean, even Red Sox fans, it was hard to generate too much outrage for this team. You could sort of pick on Alex Rodriguez a little bit, but otherwise pretty unimpeachable. So I think maybe unlike years past, people weren't quite upset. The comparison kept getting drawn to our mayor, Mike Bloomberg, who, you know, basically spent more on his election than anyone else in U.S. history, including presidents. But the approval ratings are reasonable, and he's not an awful human being, so people probably didn't begrudge him winning as much as they might otherwise. So I think for the Yankees, some of it is just the image and getting good, you know, good guys. But you do look around the league, and same thing. I mean, I went to a game in Cincinnati, and the tickets for a section of the outfield were $1. And it wasn't $1 night. It was just, this is, you know, they sell a certain block of tickets for a buck. And you say, how in the world can this team compete with the Yankees? And, you know, this started as a joke, but the one suggestion I've heard more and more lately is that instead of aligning teams and divisions based on geography, we start aligning them based on payroll.
Wow. That would be very, very interesting. What's A-Rod's reputation now? I mean, you know, we joked for years that once he finally wins the big one, everyone will love him. Is that kind of the situation that we have now in New York, that he's got a ring on his finger? Is all the past forgiven and he's now a beloved Yankee?
I wouldn't go that far. You know, if you were ranking the most popular Yankees, even among Yankees fans, he probably wouldn't be top 10. But he sort of stayed out of trouble, and he kept his mouth shut. And there were, you know, after the initial embarrassments in March and April, there really wasn't anything notable. He hit okay in the postseason. He's got Kate Hudson. He, you know, cried after they won the World Series. I think people don't necessarily it's not necessarily a ton of attraction, but I think people have certainly learned to live with him. And, you know, he he helped them win the World Series and justify his paycheck. And, you know, honestly, with guys like Jeter and they love Sabathia, and it's weird. He's, you know, the best player and probably the best player in baseball, and he's almost irrelevant. I mean, you almost don't hear about him as much as you used to when they were losing.
Yeah, I mean, I think for him, that's a good thing. And, you know, maybe in years to come, now that he's got a ring on his finger, he'll be a little bit more at ease when he's playing. Last question, the Mets. They spent a ton of money last year, one of the highest payrolls in the league. Disastrous results. How long will Omar Minaya and Jerry Manuel be around?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's different questions because, you know, it's interesting to see how the loyalties sort of get sliced and diced and get divided. Yeah, I mean, a disastrous season for the Mets, a new ballpark, big expensive payroll. And, you know, we talk about some of those Yankees teams not winning the World Series, but this Mets team, I mean, they were 20 games under 500. I mean, this was just a disaster. And injuries had something to do with it, but it was, again, just a weird, like the Knicks, just sort of a weird team in terms of personnel and matching. And, you know, I think the conventional wisdom is that both those guys, you know, Jerry Manuel better get off to a fast start, and this could be Minaya's last year. But, boy, you talk about another guy where the bloom is off the rose. You know, Minaya was sort of the toast of New York and Los Mets, and here was this, you know, this bilingual, innovative executive, and now they're – a lot of calls for his head. If the Mets don't make the postseason, I don't see how he survives.
Yeah, I would agree. It's so interesting to see New York and see all the money that is spent on payroll. And if you tallied up the championships in the last decade, I bet you could count them on one hand, right?
You know, it's funny. If you look at the highest valued teams, I mean, you look right now at the Cowboys and the Redskins and the Knicks, I mean, you know, the Yankees sort of made good on it, but for as much as we hear about big markets and teams buying championships, and the most valuable franchise overall, they're not doing so well these days. So no, it's interesting. I mean, if you take the Yankees out of the equation and look at the, you know, even the hockey teams and the Jets and the Giants, and New York might be a big media market where teams can, you know, make nice side deals and get plenty of revenue from sponsors. But you take the Yankees out of it, and it's a pretty lame sports town, actually.
Well, John, I know you have to run. I appreciate you making time for us this week on Sports Business Radio, and we'll catch up with you again soon. Again, follow John on Twitter at John's Tennis Tweet. John, thanks a lot.
Pleasure. Anytime.
You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back. This is Brian Berger, host of Sports Business Radio. Every championship team has one thing in common: good coaching. And I want to be your coach, your media coach. When I'm not hosting Sports Business Radio, I team with former Nike PR director Lee Weinstein to form New School Media Coaching. New School Media Coaching uses a fresh and interactive approach for educating our clients about dealing with today's media landscape. Whether you're an athlete, a coach, or a front office executive in the sports or business world, we'll prepare you for communications with the masses in today's social media world where everything is on the record. And just like any good coach, we'll help you practice your new skills and we'll be there to provide constructive feedback every step of the way. With a combined 40 years of experience, we're veteran coaches, but we use a new school approach. For an overview and a list of our services, visit newschoolmediacoaching.wordpress.com or email me at brian@sportsbusinessradio.com.
The website is sportsbusinessradio.com.
Nike's Jordan brand has selected Miami Heat guard Dwayne Wade to debut the Air Jordan 2010 when the shoe makes its release in February to commemorate the iconic line's 25th anniversary. This is according to Tim Reynolds of the Associated Press. Wade switched to the Jordan brand this July after 6 years with Converse, and he's the first pitchman for the Air Jordan brand other than Basketball Hall of Famer Michael Jordan. Obviously, there's other people like Chris Paul, Carmelo Anthony, Derek Jeter that wear the Jordan brand, but this is a big deal. 25 years of Air Jordan. I remember when the first Air Jordans came out, Bobby, and you know, those were must-have shoes. And even though Michael Jordan is retired, the Jordan brand sells more basketball shoes than any other brand other than Nike. So they're ahead of Adidas. They're ahead of Converse. They're ahead of Reebok. The Jordan brand, number two behind Nike in basketball shoes. And Michael Jordan hasn't suited up to play a game in several years now.
Exactly. And you know what? You said that the first year of the Jordan shoes were must-haves. And I know you agree with me. Every year that a new shoe is released, there are people that must have those shoes. And I really think the special edition will be one of those ones that you really want to go out and get a pair of.
Yeah, I mean, there are some people that want to go out and get them and wear them, and other people who just want to put them on their shelf and collect them. The shoes are going to supposedly retail for $170. All right, lots of thank yous on the show. Our guests, Jennifer Seward, John Wartime, our show staff, Nathan Roach, Bobby Corser, Josh Blank, Darren Peck, Ron Barr, James Harris, and Doug Zanger. Our sponsors, the Warsaw Sports Marketing Center at the University of Oregon, Morton's The Steakhouse, and New School Media Coaching. A podcast reminder, you can catch our show on demand via podcast every week. Just go to sportsbusinessradio.com, click on the podcast page. You can find us on iTunes. Just type in Sports Business Radio. Follow me on Twitter, at SB Radio. We have a Facebook page. Go to my blog, link to our Facebook page, become our friend. I'm Brian Berger. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next weekend on Sports Business Radio.
Greg Oden of the Portland Trailblazers supports the Ronald McDonald Houses.
I'm a big fan of the houses, happy to help them make a difference.
He helps because he believes every hospitalized child should be near their family in tough times.
And everyone can support this home away from home.
When you purchase a McCafe espresso drink or premium roast coffee, McDonald's donates a portion of proceeds to Ronald McDonald House charities in Oregon and Southwest Washington at participating McDonald's for a limited time.
A little change can make a big difference.
Sports Business Radio talks to the people who call the shots in the world of sports.
Robert Sarver, the owner of the Phoenix Suns. When people come to a Suns game, what kind of an experience do you want it to be for them?
We want them to be entertained from the time they walk in to the time they leave.
The co-owner of the Sacramento Kings, Gavin Maloof. Gavin, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure, Brian. How are you?
Dr. Miles Brand, the president of the NCAA.
Sports Business Radio.
Saturday. That's why you're a smart business person.
Or at sportsbusinessradio.com.